So it's Monday morning and kicked back into action. I hope all of you are doing the same. It's been a little bit dreich, as they would say, but the sun shone a wee bit earlier. I was out doing some personal training and getting ragged by my new PT, who's not going that kind on me, but he's nice about it. And definitely feel the after effects and a bit stiff, so might not be walking around for a wee while. By the weekend, managed to get out a wee walk with a wee one, and we're around the lanes in Brighton. We were just taking in all the independent shops and all the great stuff that's going on. The usual thing as we're walking around is, can I go to Primark or can I have bubble tea? So we were looking around and I noticed this brand called Cup. And years ago, actually developed a brand called Cup, but it was K-U-P-P, and this isn't that. This is C-U-P-P. I think it was for the Scandinavian market, the cup with a K. But this cup has always piqued my interest, and it looks a much more grown-up version of a bubble tea store, a lot more crafted, a lot more serious around the quality of ingredients and the service, and really professionalising it. When you're looking at a lot of the kiosks that are around, you know, some kind of quite bubble gummy, looks maybe a little bit amateur, and you're not sure if there's trust there. And looking at Cup, I was really wowed. So when Vita Mojo got in touch and said, oh, we've got a friend that we'd like you to interview, I absolutely jumped at the chance because I was so curious about the world of bubble tea, because being old, it's almost like the world of TikTok or AI or something like that. So when you stand and look at all the options for bubble tea, you don't know what to choose. You probably make the wrong choice, or I would. So it was great to find out a lot more about it today. Today's guest then is Paul Tanner, and he's the MD of Cup. We talk through everything from his journey to getting to MD, from being a barista and working in hospitality all of his life, and also how he's really trying to create this happy, I suppose, bubbly environment for everyone at Cup, and really focusing on gratefulness and gratitude, lots of training and development to really help support people with what they need. The interesting kink to all this as well is that it's a franchise business, at least in parts of it. So we talk about the complexities of that also. But it was fascinating to find out about the world of bubble tea. I think it's definitely undervalued at the moment, and I think we're going to see the rise of it, you know, more and more and more and more. And it'll be interesting to see what the coffee shops do, because it will definitely be eating into their coffee and tea sales. So here's Paul. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you on the flip side.
Supersonic.
Welcome to Supersonic Hospitality Marketing with me, Mark McSee, where we meet the most interesting people in hospitality, marketing, business, and beyond, to hear tips, tricks, and tales to help your brand boom. This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. And now, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Vita Mojo is proud to be the headline sponsor of the Supersonic Marketing Podcast. Vita Mojo transforms chaos into confidence for hospitality operators worldwide, empowering brands to streamline order management and take control of their business. With its flexible end-to-end order management system, Vita Mojo gives you one central place to manage your menu across every channel, brand, and location. But Vita Mojo is much more than an out-of-the-box software solution. The Vita Mojo team are with you every step of the way, providing the partnership you need, the technology you want, and the experience your guests deserve, all in one place. Vita Mojo will help you adapt to whatever the world throws at your hospitality business. For more information, visit vitamojo.com/supersonic.
Hey
Hey Supersonic listeners, I'm Lucy, Head of Commercial at Airship and Toggle. I'm just interrupting this podcast to share a great opportunity for any operators out there. You might be aware, Airship is a leading hospitality marketing CRM, supporting operators by building a better understanding of their customers' visiting habits to help them target, personalise and automate marketing and deliver a return on investment. And Toggle, which is our gift card platform and generated a whopping £48 million for the sector in 2023 through the sale of prepaid gift cards, experiences, tickets, and so much more. We're giving away any lucky listeners a chance to get 10% off both onboarding and license fees with either of our platforms for this series only. Just quote Supersonic when inquiring with us via our website on airship.co.uk or use toggle.com, and we look forward to speaking with you very soon.
So it gives me the most cup runneth over pleasure ever to introduce my next guest, who's a new friend of the show. It's Paul Tanner, the Managing Director of Cup. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good
to be here.
Where are you in the world? I think you're in Bristol, is it?
Yeah, I'm in Bristol at the moment.
Great. And I love the sign behind you, Boba all day, every day.
Yes, of course.
Very nice. But of course, else? Naturally. And then where are you? You're in some kind of shipping container?
Yeah, so this is our old shipping container we've upgraded in our Cabot Circus store. So now we use this one for training.
Very good. I remember Cabot Circus, I think I was part of the opening the Yo there, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is this still there? Yeah. It was a really good site. It was like super prominent.
Yeah.
And I seem to remember there was a program with Michelle Rue Jr., I think, and a couple of people, maybe Sarah Willingham. And anyway, they sort of hand the keys over to, you know, people that want to open restaurants. And
yeah.
I remember it was just all the PR around it. I just joined, you know, I'm going, oh my God. And there was like one plate of edamame, you know, they couldn't get the stuff out fast enough, you know. So it was like, I don't know if it was a good, it wasn't all PR's good PR, but anyway, I was a bit like, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, but it always ticked along really well. And then you were saying about your training department. So I think that's an important place to start because, you know, with hospitality, a lot of the time, you know, people kind of think, well, it's a kind of fill-in job. You just kind of get thrown in. You know, there's a lot of operators out there that might not invest in their staff as much as they could. So what about that then? What's the sort of training that you offer and what goes on in that lovely shipping container?
I think for me, training is probably one of the most important things that we can offer as a brand to help, you know, move us along, keep us safe and invest. I think I've worked with many brands before where training has always been, like you said, it's almost seem unnecessary. And actually for me, whenever that's happened, it's had a detrimental effect on the company. So joining this business, I've made sure that, you know, trainers we have in our stores, they stay, they're around, they're out and about. But we focus solely on making sure that our teams understand what it is that Cup is and what to do. So using here, for example, when we have a new store open, the team will come here for 4 days. They'll do some classroom training upstairs, learn all about the drinks, all about the history of Cup, how we came to be. And then down here, they'll do some practical training. So learning drinks, customer service, how to open and close a store. So by the time they go into their store, they've almost had that kind of experience, so it's not too alien to them.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I don't know why more people don't do that. You know, they don't take people through the brand and what it means, and I guess why you're getting up in the morning for more than just a pay packet. You know, if you have that North Star and that thing that everyone's aligned on, you know, it's absolutely vital. And, you know, I think as I was saying to you off mic there, you know, I've seen your place in Brighton. And, you know, I think it looks fantastic, you know, and usually a wee queue going on when I'm going past, and it's such a good part of town. And, you know, boba and bubble tea and all these things, it's just went stratospheric, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't even think we've really hit the peak of what bubble tea is yet. So there's plenty more to come. So it's a really exciting time to be in on the game, you know. Coffee is where coffee is and will be where it will be. But bubble tea was still kind of early in the game, I think. So there's all to play for.
Yeah, and I remember I sat in at Rose's Thai for a little while, sort of helping the marketing team, and we started offering bubble tea there. You know, just, it was one of those things, it was like, we absolutely should be doing that. And because we'd started on TikTok, we could see that trend coming through, you know, and we thought, and actually, all right, someone might not come in for a full meal or whatever it was, but it was like an amazing sort of Trojan horse for people to then come in and try the brand. And it was a strawberry one. I think I was kind of hooked on, but I was also slightly worried about, you know, a diabetic coma.
I mean, there's some really sweet ones out there, but it kind of, they cover everything. You can have your really nice indulgent Instagrammable drinks, but then you can also have, like, you know, a different option, so you can have something quite light and not as sweet. And kind of great thing with bubble tea is that, you know, you really have the control, especially at cup, to decide what goes in your drink and how much you want, how much ice you want in it, etc. So it's a great customizable drink.
For people that don't know, you know, I was on the phone at the weekend with some family, and we were talking about bao buns, and, you know, they were sort of slightly mispronouncing it and things like that, as they would, you know, they're kind of saying it as they would see it. But when those things reach my hometown, which is, you know, real backwater, you know, little kind of villagey town in Scotland, you're thinking, wow, that's amazing. So I think there's room for growth. But for anyone that doesn't know, can you break it down for us in terms of all the different types? And, you know, because it is quite confusing. However, if you're with a kid, you know, someone under 16, I mean, they've got it licked, right? They know exactly what they want.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a great spectrum. We've gone into great detail, especially over the last year, in updating our menu. But if you look at the kind of classic boba, you're looking at a milk drink with tea. You've either got black oolong or green tea in there with tapioca balls. So they are this lovely kind of cooked, chewy ball that comes into your drink. So as you're drinking it, you're also chewing it at the same time. It's a really nice sweet drink, and it's delicious. So there, other than that, there's we've got brown sugar. So there's a that's kind of quite new trend. Everybody loves brown sugar. It's very Instagrammable. We have brown sugar around the wall of the cup. We have our fruit teas, which are all made with real fruit. We have taro. So taro, again, is almost like a root powder. It's nice and purple, but it tastes just like birthday cake. So there's quite a large variety. As well as that, we have our kind of matcha teas as well. So they're your, obviously, your bright, lovely green teas that we can also layer. So we have like a mango matcha, which is kind of split level, a rose matcha. So there's lots of options to have. You don't just have to have tapioca either. We've got things like popping bubbles. So they're literally little balls that burst in your mouth, and they could be like passion fruit, blueberry, etc.
Yeah.
And then other than that, there's jellies as well. So we do grass jellies, basil seed. There's quite a lot of ingredients that go into just a certain drink, and you can change it up as much as you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, that, you know, from research I'd been doing a while ago on certainly Gen Z and lower millennials, was a lot of it was around customization and feeling like you were getting a drink just for you, right? Because I think I was watching a comedy thing last night with Grace Campbell, and she was talking about main character syndrome. And I think there's a lot of that in the, quite rightly, you know, where they're all, you know, wanting things that are just for them, a little bit different, a little bit unique. And also, when you do look at that gap of where the kids go now, you know, drinking sort of on the decline for the younger people. And also, ages ago, I was in a Joe and the Juice sort of after 8 o'clock, and it was rammed, right? But rammed with mainly Muslim people. And it was like, of course you should be serving all markets. And, you know, I think there's some ways that you think, well, you know, there's pubs, and what does that mean, people are staying home? But you've got this lovely alternative universe almost of having it really at any time of day. And, you know, something that's just genuinely new. Are you seeing the coffee shops starting to try their hand at it, or have they stayed well away?
No, there's been a little bit of interest. So I think your places like Costa, et cetera, have introduced like popping bubbles. Obviously, it's a very small part of what boba is. Yeah. So it's nothing that that is personally would worry me right now.
Yeah.
I think in terms of, you know, if you're going to do bubble tea, you need to be able to do it really well and have the right things to be able to do it. I think because it is becoming so popular, especially, you know, with the younger generation, we will probably see a lot more of kind of interpretations of boba around.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, though, you know, maybe some people try and mainstream it slightly, you know, and sort of soften the edges. But, you know, I think it's all there, you know, just in terms of discovery. And then in terms of naming all the different types of things that you've got, is there lots of kind of fun around the naming, or do you keep it quite simple?
No, we tried to have fun with it. So we've got Jax, who's our brand director. She is all behind the creativity of the drinks and is amazing. But when it comes, she'll create drinks and then we'll sit down together and all decide what we're going to do, whether it's the campaign lead or what the actual drink is going to be called. So I think Jax has brought forth, I think last summer we had the Mojitos. So we tried to tease quite a lot, which is great. We had Valentine's Day last year. We had Tiamo, which was quite nice. So we tried to have a little bit of a play where we can, even on our app, is that we have a loyalty app. So we tried to have a bit of fun where we can. Obviously, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm all not for too serious. I'm probably the least corporate person that you could meet. I find that very difficult. So I still like to inject a bit of fun in things and to keep things like it is if you had your four stores that were just yours.
Yes. Yeah. And then who are you seeing coming in then? What's the main sort of demographic for you right now?
It's quite vast, to be honest, because if you look over across the UK and where our stores are, we have a large Southeast Asian kind of customer base, which is great. But then you go into some parts of the UK, like in Lincoln, it's largely Caucasian, always around the kind of 13 to around 35 mark, predominantly female, I would say, within our demographic. But depending on where you go, it really does change. So, you know, when we think we've got it, a new amount or new people haven't then just come into the business. So it's still not quite found, I think, who exactly this is for, because everybody's still new to it. Everybody's still trying it and wanting to see what the fuss is about.
And then when it comes to marketing cup, how do you go about that?
So we do different things. When we do a store open, we do 100 free bubble teas, which is really good. So the first 100 customers come in, they all have a free regular bubble tea. And then after that, we do 50% off for the rest of the day. That brings in itself has kind of sold a lot of the stores themselves. We haven't had to do too much, which is very lucky, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you don't usually see a company giving away so much on their first day, especially.
Yeah.
It definitely brings the hype around and gets people sharing, especially on social media. And then you have people like our trainers who attend, and they will be on TikTok. They'll be interacting with our customers and just trying to get us visible online as much as possible.
Yeah. And then once the store's actually opened and all that, does it then become for the franchisee to market, or is it central marketing?
So it's a bit of both. We really encourage local marketing. So, you know, we've got some franchisees that, you know, will sponsor for local football clubs, or they'll get involved in certain areas of their local community, which is absolutely great. And then for us, in terms of HQ, we'll look at the kind of more top line aspects, whether that be digital marketing, social media, and all of those. So we try to have a good and nice play between us all to kind of cover all aspects. Usually a franchisee in their area is an expert in their area, so they know who to find, where to find them, and kind of what to aim for, so we can support them during that journey, which is quite nice.
And then with the brand, I mean, I can tell already, you know, how passionate and clear you are about the brand. So, you know, is that quite a hard job to get the franchisees to sort of get it, or are they sort of on board?
No, not at all. I think in terms of the concept, it is quite clear as to what we are, who we are, and what we're delivering. And I think The only way that we can move forward is if people have the same vision. And that's the way that I would only move forward with somebody, is that they share that same passion that we do. It's very easy to open as many stores as you want with as many people as you want. But if they don't share that brand vision with you, then actually that's when you start to lose a little bit of control. And things start to go a little bit awry.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, that little bit of dilution and it just becomes a wash, you know. And actually, I'm drinking some water now at the moment and I'm wishing there was something in the water. I'm feeling really boring talking to you now. So if we go back then, you know, how did you get into this? You know, was it a life in hospitality? Were you doing other things? You know, how did you get to this journey and being the MD of Cup?
So I've always been in hospitality. So I am originally from Berkshire, but I moved to Somerset years ago, about 13 years ago. And I started in a company called Coffee One.
Oh, you know that?
Yeah. So I started with them when they were very small. I think they were at store 19.
Was that Brains?
With Brains, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just as they'd sold to Brains, I'd joined. And I started off as a barista for them. And then I ended up being a regional trainer. And then I think I finished at store 50, which was really great. And then I moved on. So I've worked for places like YVL Garden Centres, Costa Coffee, the Hannah Group, who are a sushi brand. Mm. So I've always been really firmly in hospitality. I think one of the things that you can really see within my kind of jobs is that I flip between equity and franchise. And I think always miss franchise, because there's always that extra kind of bit to fight with. So I had a mutual friend who introduced me to Lee and Jax, who are owners of the business. And we met and we just really got on. So they had just started franchising. I had a lot of experience in franchising, so I came over as their head of franchise. And then I think I've been here for 2 years now, and about 6 months ago they offered me the MD role, which was really exciting.
It's great. And I think, you know, even speaking to you now, I can see how much of a breath of fresh air you would be. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you seem like you're all about having fun, and, you know, you'd be able to inspire the people. And I'm sure there's a lot of younger people working there too, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think in terms of the, you know, Cup and, you know, just thinking about your training leading up to this, what's your sort of like latte art like? And, you know, because I'm really interested in all that. So are you pretty handy when it comes to all that stuff?
So do you know what? If you put me on a coffee machine, because of all my coffee, I could do coffee all day, every day, fine. I am amazing. So yeah, coffee I'm pretty good at. I don't think I would be as good as making 40 bubble teas in a row.
All right.
Being plainly honest.
Right, so we need to get you in store a bit more.
I need to, yeah, I do. I need to make some more bubble teas.
Well, is there an equivalent in bubble tea of the latte art, or is it more about that two-tone thing you were talking about in some of the things?
Yeah, so we have the layered drinks, which are great. We do have coffee and coffee boba, which is really nice. And then we have some hot boba as well, which is good.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we do have our own variations of them.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. I'm always just like fascinated with like coffee hacks and all these things, you know. And I was lucky enough, I got to go to the Costa Training School for a day and do that and all that, you know. And I've just, listen, I'd be absolutely hopeless at, you know, anything like that. And then when I worked at Pret, you had to go jump on being a barista in store sometimes. But when someone came up and said, I'll have a black filter coffee, I was just like, I wanted to kiss them, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fantastic.
I know. I'll always stay on the till. If I go into store, I'm like, I'm on till, guys, because everybody.
Yeah. So thinking about the other side of the coin then, you know, because obviously you've got the hospitality experience, the drinks experience and all that. How did you prepare for being an MD and leading a business and leading people? How did that all work?
I think I had... When I started working, I had some really, really good mentors. I had a lady called Katie Tucker, actually. She, when I worked at Coffee One, she was really, really great at, for me, to see how the impact of everything you do and what that has on your team. Mm-hmm. And she always saw the really human side of work. So it was never, this person can work 6 days in a week. Well, actually, they've got to, you know, wash their clothes. They've got to do this. They've got family. They might have appointments. She was really, really great at seeing the human aspect of things. And actually, that's something which is really simple, but is often, you know, overlooked, yeah. I think. So she was great. I also had a guy called Phil Tyzak, who I worked at Wymore Garden Centres with. Mm. And he was figures, money. He kind of, he was, you know, whatever it says on the P&L, we've got to get that, etc. So he was really good at kind of steering me and this is how to do this. So I think in some sort of weird walked way, I found a really nice middle ground of this is the direction I want to go in, but this is how I want our people to be treated as well. Yeah. So I think having great mentors is really important. I think sometimes now, especially, people are working so fast that we forget to stop and help people along the way. Yeah. So that's what I'm really trying to do here is that, you know, we see some really good people who want to move on and to do great things, but actually it's only going to work if we stop and we actually help them get there.
Yeah.
So that's what happened to me, so I don't want to pass that on.
You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, looking at the recruitment side of things in hospitality right now, actually there are enough people around. They don't have the quality of people. I mean experience in ways. So from that perspective, you're doing absolutely the right thing. I think it's like we've got to realise that it's now a big training need, you know, getting someone in, and we can't have our pick of people that are already chefs or already baristas or already have worked, you know, in QSR or in restaurants or whatever. And, you know, I think there's much more emphasis on, you know, that training and development side of things. And also training and development, it just means so many different things to people too, right? You know, some people want to be MD and sitting in your chair. Some people want to be a GM. Some people don't, you know, some people just want to do a great job at what they do, and that's fine. So, you know, I think that's what's so exciting about hospitality. You know, it's just so varied and flexible, and, you know, whatever it is that you want to be. You know, so I had a client a while ago and he said something great, and he said, it's either for a reason, what was it? A reason, a season, or a lifetime.
Nice.
And I thought that was a lovely way to put it, you know. Yeah. You know, I think it's still, you know, best industry ever. It's why I've stayed in it. You know, it's such a kind and supportive industry. And then thinking about your day and how you're continuing to learn and all these things, you know, what does a typical week look like? How are you managing? Because I guess you've been used to being out in stores a lot with operations or working in them when you were younger and all these things. So, you know, what does that look like now? And have you got things that you know, take a break for and make sure you've got work-life balance, because it's so easy to just work all the time, right?
It is very easy to work all the time. And I really enjoy work. So for me, it's very easy to work because I enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's, if someone says, oh, just stop, it's not, for me, it's not as easy just stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. It's not something that I don't want to do. I think my week it varies all the time, depending on what's going on in the business. We've just launched sushi within the brand, actually. Oh. which has been great. So a lot of my time at the moment is making sure the launch of that is going well. It's keeping up with my team, so making sure everybody's okay, they have everything they need. Doing our weekly catch-ups with our partners and the operations team, and just making sure that everybody has the tools they need to be able to do their job. And I think for me, that's one of my most important jobs. Otherwise, there's no room for growth.
Yeah, definitely. And then thinking about Cup itself, what was this story of Cup then, you know, in terms of it starting with the two founders? You know, how did all that come about?
So Lee actually started the business in 2012. He was in Taiwan. Mm. And he was just having a holiday. I think he was away teaching, actually. And he came across bubble tea and just thought, you know what, I really want to do this myself. Mm-hmm. When he came back to Bristol, he set upon it himself. So he did all of his training in Taiwan. He met with the best of the best, did everything he could, and decided that he was going to bring a container into Cabot Circus, of which he absolutely did do. Yeah. And it's been a massive hit ever since. So A couple of years ago, we hit our 10-year mark.
Congratulations.
Which is great. He mainly, all from just trying the drink abroad, he wanted to bring that authenticity over to, you know, 10, 12 years ago now, where bubble tea probably was just a twinkle in everybody's eye in the UK. Lee had the forefront to actually, you know, see that kind of gap in the market and bring it over. And actually, that's been great for us. Jax, who's the brand director, she joined a little bit later. So she came over just with a job to help Lee in Cabot. They ended up working so well together that she then hopped on and became part of the business as well. So it was a really nice organic way that the business has grown and started. And actually, a lot of it lies between great relationships and friendships, which is for me quite a nice foundation and something that when I joined especially was nice to see, because it's very easy to, you know, have this person join or, you know, this company do this, etc. But for Lee, you know, he has opened his business to other people like Jax and myself. Yeah. He's trusted us and actually he's given us a slice of that pie, and you know, that for that we're definitely grateful.
Definitely. And how many stores is it now?
So at 35 at the moment.
Wow.
And we've got another, I'd say, 10 to 15 this year.
Wow, that's huge. Yeah. And
you've got a lot in Scotland actually coming up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, what are you going, where are you going, Scotland?
We've got, if I butchered this name, then I'm sorry, but we've got we've got Moss Todlock, which is coming.
Okay, well, that's bad.
You should know.
Half my life, so yeah.
Yeah, we've got a few more going in Glasgow. We've just opened Dundee, and then we've got Belfast actually as well happening, writing. So yeah, we've got quite a few happening this year.
And in terms of opening strategies, how does that work? Are you working with like a data team? Is it franchisee led? You know, how does that work?
So it's led by our franchisees. It's their territories that, like I said before, we kind of go by the assumption that they know their territory best. So we do put our trust in our franchisees to, you know, scout their locations. Wherever we can help, we absolutely will. So, you know, we'll definitely put in the time to look at locations with them. Mm. But yeah, we both play a part in that when it comes to location.
And where are they in Glasgow?
We've got Byers Road, we've got Sunny Street, Victoria Road. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the West End, Byers Road is just...
Byers Road is amazing,
it's the best place. So if I hadn't moved, I'd hope I would be there. Yeah, I think that's... Yeah. I've got that right move alert still set up, you know, just like having a little look. But then I'm reminded about the weather and I don't bother. But yeah, it's one of those things. And then, you know, in terms of the early days then and starting, you know, you're doing some like festival things and, you know, was there a milestone that, you know, really was like, right, this is going to happen, like that innocent moment where they had the two bins and the smoothie bottles?
Yeah, I think I have to answer this from a Jackson Lee perspective. I think for them, I think doing, you know, Glastonbury Festival, you know, looking into, you know, they started the whole franchise discussions during COVID, you know, where the world was kind of shut down. So to see that come to fruition and open your first store in Whitechapel, I think, you know, they opened Whitechapel and they had a police barricade because there were so many people.
Wow.
They were like, oh my God, this is crazy. So, you know, for them, I know particularly that would be huge for them. I think since I've joined, National Bubble Tea Day for me was a really massive success for us. Mm-hmm. I think nobody else is doing it quite like we are. We did it, or we're going to do it this year. So I think that's going to be really exciting. It's a bit of a mix, that one.
And what did you do for National Bubble Tea Day then?
So last year we did 100 free bubble teas across all of our stores.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that with minor figures. So that was the first time we've ever done anything like that. And then we did a discount for the rest of the day. This year is going to be bigger and better. We're still going to do the same 100 free drinks. We've partnered up with some really, really great companies. So we're hoping to kind of go off with a big bang this year and make it bigger than ever.
And what date is it?
So this is the last day of April.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that'll be fantastic. Yeah, I think when I was at Yo, I always enjoyed doing those kind of activations. You know, we had a little team of Japanese maids that went round and they were called the Japarazzi. Don't know if you get away with it now, right enough. But at the time, you know, it was just such great fun. And one of the times we had them bursting out an A-team van for some reason. And then we had a pop-up rave in just off Oxford Street with Jaguar Skills, the DJ. And, you know, the police turned up and all that, you know. So, yeah, it was just fun. I love doing those things, you know. It's where you can really let your sort of marketing freak flag fly, you know, and just go for it.
See everyone's reactions as well.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, it's nothing better than meeting customers and, you know, getting that insight of what it means to people as well. So, in terms of talking about boba, bubble tea, all that, is there an official phrase that you talk about? I can see the boba sign behind you. Do people kind of switch those in and out?
We did go with bubble tea. So when we started, everything was bubble tea. However, with boba is definitely more recognised across the world. So if you're looking at, you know, USA, etc., stuff like that, the term boba is much easier identifiable for the drink. So now we go by cup. Boba tea.
Yeah. I mean, I think the branding's really good as well. You know, it's like really, you know, quite subtle as well. Like a lot of the, you know, it looks a bit more pro, if you like, not to be disparaging of any others, but it can look a bit sort of bubblegum pop, you know, like too young.
Yeah, 100%. I think Lee actually is a huge, it's Lee's vision when it comes to store design. And he always wanted it to be a brand that you could grow up in. So, you know, you could go there as a teenager, you could go there as a young adult, etc. And it wouldn't feel weird. Yeah. Whereas, you know, some brands you could only go when you're, you know, 15, 16, and then you kind of outgrow them. With us, we hope that people won't outgrow us.
Yeah. No,
a creative agency for the hospitality sector, Saved by Robots create compelling brands and memorable experiences through great design and engaging storytelling. From Scottish Restaurant of the Year Sugar Boat to TipJar, the digital tipping platform that's taken over the world, Saved by Robots excel at bringing ideas to life. As well as developing new concepts and refreshing existing brands, the robots provide outsourced graphic design to help multi-site operators grow with confidence. Check out their work and get in touch at savedbyrobots.com. Hi, it's me, Mark McSee, with a quick message. Just to let you know, my day job, obviously, some of you might know, is being a brand and marketing advisor, strategist, coach, all these things for tech, B2B and hospitality businesses. Just to let you know that I'm actually going to have a couple of wee spaces, I think, opening up over the next few months. So if you need a me in your life and in your business to help you get more famous and help you grow those sales, then please get in touch. It's mark@supersonic.marketing, and I would love to hear all about your business and obviously help you too. And I'll be using experience from Pret, Dishoom, Rosa's Thai, Holiday Extras, SSP, Costa, and many, many more. So if you need a friendly neighbourhood brand and marketing advisor, then look no further and give me a wee shout. Also, if you can tell all your pals, that'd be really helpful too.
Triple Seat, the ultimate event management software for your hospitality venue. Used by 15,000 venues globally, including Daisy Green, Aqua, Nobu, Hut Shack, and many more, join Triple Seat today and grow your event business. Our web-based software saves up to 30 plus hours of event admin time per month. Go from inquiry to booked event quicker with Triple Seat. We integrate into leading platforms like OpenTable and Seven Rooms. Cut down on event admin and streamline the event management process with Triple Seat. Book a demo today at tripleseat.com.
And then thinking about the store experience and also the cornerstones of the store inside, have you got like any kind of touchstones inside? Is it like a neon sign, or is there a certain decor inside that, you know, sort of sets you apart? And also, what's those kind of service steps for people when they come in as well? You know, how do people kind of walk away knowing they've been cupped? That's not too bad.
So I think most notable noticeable would probably be the big, we have a big customizable signs within our windows that say cup. They are absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Yeah.
Within the sites, we have our pegboard merch. So it's really customizable. It's really different to any kind of merch units that you've seen anywhere else.
Yeah.
And they're really eye-catching. Things like our plushies, our little boba plushies, everybody goes mad for. I've never done anything like it, to be honest. Yeah. But in terms of customer journey, I think for me, we've just introduced kiosks into our sites. That was a big worry for me, especially because of what I didn't want to lose was that customer interaction. So we've done a huge amount of training there with our teams that, you know, doesn't matter if somebody's using a kiosk, we still make sure that we say hello. We still ask them if they need help because, you know, boba is still relatively new to people and sometimes they don't know what they're doing. So I would say that at every point of our step of the customer journey, we try to be there with you and go along with you and ask questions. Yeah. I think earlier we were talking about, you know, everybody has their own boba, and that's absolutely true. You know, we've done many a nights with influencers, etc. And, you know, I can tell they try a drink and it's not quite for them. But if you say to them, right, do you like a milky drink? Do you like more fruity? What is it you like? You can always find that drink for that person naturally. Once you've asked them a couple of questions, they taste their second drink and they're like, oh my God, this is great. So we try our best to find that perfect drink for everybody.
So when people come in, it's a self-service kind of kiosk touchscreen menu.
Yeah, some of our stores, yeah.
Yeah. And you're working with Vita Mojo on that?
Yeah, so we've worked with Vita Mojo on that. They've done an amazing job. It looks fantastic. So, yeah, I think around 13 to 16 of our stores are now kiosk-led, which is great. And then the others are till-based. So all still with Vita Mojo. But, yeah, doing incredibly well.
And what's the customer and employee feedback been about them?
It's been really good, actually. I think in terms of the team, they feel like they're able to operationally just productively get on with what they need to be able to do. I think sometimes you can spend a lot of the time just standing at a till when actually we could be productive doing something else, which has been fab. And then, you know, I think having everything in one place where we can, you know, out of stock, in stock, change this up, etc., just being able to do that has been a massive help for us. Whereas, you know, working with other platforms, you know, you have to log into 7 different accounts just to get one change. And with Vita Mojo, that's definitely not the case. So that makes me very happy.
Yeah. I mean, anyone I've spoken to that's been using them, and obviously they're sponsoring the show, but, you know, genuinely, it's worked incredibly well. You know, Gales, Honest Burger, all these, you know, they're really, you know, sort of very complimentary about it. And then most people that I talk to in your chair are basically saying, I was really dubious about this. You know, I really didn't want the humanity to go and didn't see how it was going to work. But I think everyone seems to have kind of hybrided it almost, you know. And one of the best examples is Gales and their loyalty scheme, you know. And I was in one Sunday night, and what was brilliant was I got my points and all the technical stuff, but also on top of that, they then gave across, you know, a lovely loaf and some cakes and
absolutely.
As well. And it was just like, it was just doubly memorable, you know, because of that. And and you've got the loyalty scheme as well through the T app.
Yes, we have. So we've got the cup app, and then we have our loyalty section on there.
Yeah.
Our lovely little catchphrase. So yeah, you can get a free topping on there. Mm-hmm. We also do, I think on the 9th, you can get your free.
Yeah.
As well.
And that will be a powerful group of people, right, to be able to market to and all the rest of it, you know, in terms of getting people in, you know, like flash offers, or, you know, if things are a bit, you know, sort of dull in terms of, or there's a lull, sorry, in terms of your day parts. And then in terms of trading, is there anything surprising about that? I mean, is it weekends or gangbusters during the week? Not so much. Or what do you tend to find?
I mean, for me, it's a massive culture shock because I'm used to, you know, working in coffee shops, it's you open from 7 till 5 or 7 till 6. Yeah. With bubble tea, you know, it's later on in the afternoon. So they say bubble tea time is from 3 o'clock, really. But then people can stay open until, you know, midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's still trade there, which, you know, is crazy to think about, but it works, especially in those kind of community areas. So yeah, it's very, very different.
Yeah. And then with the app as well, is that, you know, sort of phone-based, and then, you know, what kind of behaviour are you seeing from the app, from people that are on it?
So the app is really good. I mean, we try to encourage people as much as we can to use it. What we've just started to do is a meal deal with our guys. So if they scan their loyalty app, they get some money off of that meal deal as well. So at every point, we're trying to encourage the customer to use this so that we can be able to market to those people later on and be able to offer them more things later on. Really important for us, and actually without that, if we to go back to, you know, cards and stamps, that only does so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I always sort of try to get people to stay away from sort of dumb loyalty, because as a marketer, being selfish, you know, you want some of that data then to be able to go out and make sure that happens. And then thinking about you know, the Bobas themselves, what's the sort of tops, what's your Big Mac?
I would say anything in the brown sugar range. Uh-huh. If you look across every single store, it's the best seller. So we have a drink called the Brown Sugar Premium, which is it has, you know, double cream in it. It has that brown sugar syrup. It is literally sweetest, most delicious, and most pretty drink you'll ever see in your life. And it is definitely the most popular. I think if I ever thought about removing that, I probably would not be here.
You'd be sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And is there anything that stands out in terms of customer feedback, you know, whether that's on Google reviews or, you know, what do you look to see what the customers are saying?
In what sense?
In terms of them giving feedback of, you know, the experience, the product, you know, what are the types of things people are saying?
So I think it's interesting, really, when you look. So I look at reviews every Friday myself. I like to see what's happened within all of the stores and see if there's any kind of ones that we need to really jump onto. But I would say that the reviews we get are mainly very, very positive. People are always happy with the taste of their drink. I think because we use organic milk, we use real fruit, loose leaf teas, bespoke syrups, and all those things. It's very, very authentic to what bubble tea is. We've obviously had to use certain ways to make that operationally sound, but we still keep very, very authentic to what bubble tea is and what boba is. And I think when you look at our reviews, you see that within there, which actually makes me very happy to know that we're on the right track, especially those bubble tea connoisseurs who have it all the time, or, you know, especially have it in their home countries and come to the UK and try it and say, yes, this is the brand I would choose. And I'm like, yes.
Well, I mean, having that brand preference is massive. You know, if you own even, you know, 1/100th of one brain cell in someone's head, that when they're thinking about even a sweet treat, you know, and they're thinking about you, you're part of that repertoire. I mean, that's absolutely priceless, you know, from that perspective. And actually thinking about bubble tea brands, really, I mean, not many spring to mind, really. You know, it does feel pretty fragmented, and I think you've got a great opportunity to be the one, and especially if you've got that national spread as well, you know, I think that'll give you a lot of trust and recall and things like that. I guess one of the things that springs to mind when you think about bubble tea is plasticky, you know, so you've got plastic cups and whatever straws, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it, but I know that you're obviously quite focused on that and you don't want to be doing harm. So, you know, what sort of measures do you put in to sort of counteract the sort of, you know, environmental challenges that you might have?
It's a really good question. I think it's just as bubble tea is, it is a very plastic heavy business, which is just terrible. we've tried our best wherever we can to make sure that we are looking at sustainability. So whether that is we were the first in UK to actually launch bamboo straws rather than cardboard, which have been really, really great for us. The film lids that go on top of our drinks are made of paper rather than plastic. So where we can, make sure that we do not use plastic, we won't. So even in the products that we order in from Taiwan with our suppliers, where we can either move that to paper or we can reduce the amount of plastic that's within, we absolutely will. And I know at the moment we're having some great conversations with some boba cup suppliers about hopefully getting some compostable cups, which is a hard one, because it's not like with coffee cups, because of the seal at the top, so the rim, it needs to be a certain diameter for our sealers, etc. They're not bespoke, you can just grab off the shelf. So it's a long process, but it has to happen for us to kind of keep ahead of the game. So we try to utilize, you know, especially waste as well within sites. If there was any waste, we're pretty good at keeping waste to an absolute minimum. But if we do, we have too good to go. We try to utilize the kind of people around us who have the same ethos and want to help in that kind of way too. So I think we, as always, we can always do better, and we always will try to do better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great, you know, that you're focused on it. And, you know, having sort of been in prep before and Yo Sushi as well, you know, it's hard, you know, it's really difficult, and you're obviously trying your best. But I don't think it's solvable in an instant, but I think it's about taking those millimeter steps towards it, you know, the best that you can. But, and then also your customer base will be demanding that too, I'm sure, you know, especially the younger ones that are, you know, all gritted up and very kind of, you know, focused on that, you know, quite rightly. So, yeah, so I think it'll go hand in hand, you know, for sure. And then what about hospitality then in general? You know, you're obviously been around a bit in hospitality and you've seen its ups and downs and everything. You know, what do you think the current state of hospitality is in terms of the challenges you've got running a business, but also the perception of it? You know, what are you finding there?
I think it's, if I was being very honest, I would say it is difficult. I don't think that nobody, I think, is in a very comfortable place where everything feels hunky-dory as it was. You know, the country's gone through major challenges, and I think everybody can feel that, no matter what business you're in, especially with the people I've spoken to. So I think naturally it's very hard. And I think the more that we talk about it, the better it is, because I think, you know, some people can feel very alone, that, you know, you're the only person that's going through this. What have I done? Is this me? Am I making the wrong decisions? And actually, that if you just reach out to some people, that, you know, 9 times out of 10 people are going through exactly the same things as you. Things are definitely better than they were last year, let's say. And I think once the public have more faith, then they will start spending their money more. Okay. And we just have to go with the flow. So wherever we can help our customers to save money and not have to, you know, hike up our prices or to do, you know, anything drastic, you know, we will do our best. I think, you know, that reactionary cause of, you know, things aren't doing well, let's put prices up, this isn't happening, let's do this, that's somewhere where I don't like to be. You know, at the end of the day, we don't want to isolate customers, we want to keep our customers. So, you know, it's a hard time. If it's a hard time for a business, it'll be a hard time for customers too. So we're all kind of in it together.
But in terms of pricing then, do you think that you're a little bit bulletproof there? Because it's, you know, I think it is, it doesn't feel like a commodity purchase to me. So, you know, I think it does, it's almost like a accessible luxury in a nice way. So, yeah, I mean, do you see anyone sort of balking at the prices or anything like that, or not so much?
No, I mean, we've never had anybody complain about our prices. And, you know, last year we did, I think it was last year, we did our first price increase in over a year and a half. Yeah. It was very slight at that. And actually, I was nervous that, you know, it would be a bit, you know, too much, but we've had no negative feedback around where we are. You know, I'm always looking at other brands and where we kind of sit within the rest of our kind of peer group, and I think we fit quite nicely, you know, in the middle to the top end, which was where I want to be. I think we've set ourselves in the right place.
Yeah, no, I think it's you're in this. I mean, excuse the pun, but you're in such a nice sweet spot. I think that, you know, it's emerging, and there'll be some value to be added to your price for you being the front runner brand and things like that. So, you know, I think that's a great place to be, and it's not a commodity yet. And I don't think people really. I think there's a lot of price elasticity in what you do. So no, and as long, you know, as long as obviously people feel like the experience was, you know, something a bit more special than maybe a pop-up in a mall, you know, with a couple of cassette banners and a boba machine, then, you know, I think you'll see that value coming back for sure.
I think we've been quite lucky as well, because we actually supply all of our stores ourselves. So like 90% of the products come straight from us. So we buy direct from Taiwan. So Lee has great relationships with everybody over there. He visits there regularly. I try to see the kind of new trends that are coming in. So we actually have a really good stronghold on our prices with stock, et cetera. Yeah. So it makes things a lot easier when we do go into those, you know, when the country is dipping in and out of, you know, recessions.
How does the boba arrive? What does it look like in its raw state when you get it?
The little tapioca balls, they look like almost like grey Play-Doh. Right. Like if you were to just push them, they just turn to dust. So it's a really, really weird thing to see in its raw form, because when it's cooked, it turns to this like nice, glossy, black, chewy tapioca ball.
Yeah.
Very different.
But and how do they arrive to you? Is it in massive vats, or is it like vacuums?
We have huge containers. So like the massive container I'm in, container come to the warehouse, you know, once every other month with a massive, massive amount of stock from Taiwan for us. And then it all gets put into the lovely warehouse behind me.
Wow. And also, you know, the fact that your ingredients are of such a top, you know, pedigree, then, you know, I think that'll pay off in the customer messaging as well. And then just talking about trends then, and future stuff, you know, what are the trends you're foreseeing in your sort of universe of, you know, bubble tea and Asiana and all that sort of stuff? What do you think?
So I think the way things are moving is all around collaboration for me. So, you know, I'm seeing into my future, and I'm seeing collabs. I think for me, that's where I want to be. I want to work with people who are like-minded, who we can offer something to them, they can offer something to us, and work together on, you know, something nice and exciting. That's where I'm hoping things are going to be. And I think for me, it's great to work with new businesses, new people.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited talking to you. I've really had a million ideas about things you might be able to do. You know, and I've got an 11-year-old daughter, and she's mad for all this stuff. So, you know, I think it's really exciting, that sort of tweeny sort of market, as well as obviously all the rest of it. But, you know, that hardcore of you know, almost little fashionistas, you know, wanting to have that badge of honour.
Absolutely.
You know, mall ratty kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's really, really exciting. And also thinking about collabs, I mean, you've got it behind you. You know, all I can think about is Boba Fett and Star Wars and all that stuff. So I'm sure there's a Disney Lucas film.
There's something there.
Thing at some point, I'm sure, for, you know, definitely. And then in terms of, you know, the future for you, the future for Cup and the future for hospitality, well, where's your sort of head at? What are you hoping and what are you thinking for the next couple of years, do you think?
For the next couple of years, all I hope for is that everybody is happy and that we stay in a positive world where we can grow. Yeah. That, I think that's as simple as that for me. It's not for me, it's not always about the numbers that we open this many stores and we do that many things. I want to do something well, and I want my people to be happy when they come to work. And, you know, that should be the goal. You know, if we're all waking up and we're enjoying going to work, then we're doing a great thing. I think if we can do something well and people are enjoying it, then that's even better. Yeah. So for me, I like to keep it very simple. We've got some really great things coming up in the summer and for the rest of the year. And I think it's going to just bring a bit of light. You know, I just want a bit of light, a little bit of happiness, a fun approach to things. Yeah. Like I said, I'm really try not to be very too corporate. I like to have fun. I like to, you know, be with our people and, you know, with our partners. So, yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
And then the future for hospitality as well, you know, what are you foreseeing there? Do you, it's going to get worse before it gets better, or what are you thinking?
I don't know. I think that things are getting better anyway. Yeah. So I think now is the time to start, you know, playing, a bit, coming outside, doing a bit more. Yeah. And you can definitely see that even with the way that I, you know, myself, my partner and friends, et cetera, are all shopping, people are going out more. There's a lot more invitations to go out to lunch. There's a lot more of this, whereas before, you know, nobody wanted to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you can definitely see within your own kind of groups that things are changing. So I have hope that everybody else is starting to feel the strain a little bit less.
Yeah. Oh, and saying that, it is quite interesting to watch London at the moment, and it, you know, is seemingly becoming a bit of a long lunch place these days. And, you know, I've been at a couple of places lately and they've been rammed at like 2 p.m, 3 p.m. And, you know, it's quite interesting to see major city centres, how they're evolving with hybrid working and all that stuff. So, yes, it's going to be an interesting sort of period. A couple of things I really wanted to ask you, actually, just before we go into some fun questions. One was around CUP, what do you tell the teams, you know, so an induction and what is CUP all about? Is there like a brand positioning? Is there a DNA? What's the main things that you sort of tell them about CUP, really?
So I think for us, it's all about talking about what we do differently. So, you know, we have our real fruit, our organic milk, our loose leaf teas, and our bespoke syrups. You'll look at many other brands that are out there right now, and actually they won't fulfill all of those things. So as a brand, we look at authenticity. We try to stay as authentic to the Taiwanese, you know, drink that was bought that came up in the 80s. And I think that's what we tried to get across to our teams, is so that every customer knows when they're coming in is exactly what they're getting. So they know that this isn't just, you know, a bit of powder that we've taken out of a cup. You know, we still put things in shakers. You see all that theatre within our shops that we still use a sealing machine. So we want the whole experience to be as authentic as possible. And I think that's the main thing that we tried to get across to our teams.
Nice. And you've made it, right? You're now an MD. You can have the badge and all that stuff. I know it doesn't seem like it sometimes when you're actually there. I know. I think it's one of those things where you never quite believe it, I suppose, until maybe you're a bit, you know, older and you're in your rocking chair or whatever. But just some inspiration for people as well that are maybe barista at the moment or thinking of getting any hospitality, or, you know, have you got any sort of words of advice that, you know, the best way to get to where you got to?
I would say keep your mind open and try to learn as much as possible. I didn't go to uni. I didn't do any of that. I do all my learning by talking, by doing. Mm. And actually, for me, that was the best experience I could have ever had. And I think I opened myself up to doing things which I probably wasn't very comfortable with doing. Yeah. And they have all made me, you know, as what I would kind of say, well-rounded. So yeah, I would definitely say keep your mind open and say yes to things when you're given the opportunity, because there's a reason why that opportunity has been given to you. And you wouldn't be asked otherwise. So say yes and give it a go.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And also with uni, I'm always torn. I mean, I went and did it, marketing, but I could write on a post-it probably the amount of stuff that I actually used from it. It was maybe more life experience than it was marketing experience. And also when I went, it was kind of, the internet was kind of just starting really. So, you know, none of that was taught about how you do any of that.
Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, I'm in deep admiration of people that just go, do you know what? I'm just going to learn on the job and I'm going to do it my way. And so many people that I know have done brilliant things without having the bit of paper that I'm not even sure where it is, to be honest. But there you go. But yeah, I've got the receipts to show for it. That's for sure, the debts. So that, earning while you learn on the job, I think is a really smart way to do it. So a couple of wee fun questions then. So we do this mark out of 10, which is just all about your favourite things, really. So favourite city to eat in?
Favourite city to eat in? Oh, that's very difficult. I would have to be very honest. I live in Somerset, so anywhere out of Somerset is a massive Yes, because there's nothing in Somerset.
Something different. Yeah.
There's not much there. So I would say anywhere outside of Somerset would be great.
Well, okay, that's a good answer, you know. You know, a lot of the time we get London and it's like, okay, so I maybe should start saying except London. If you've got a favourite hotel?
I'll be honest, I am a real homebody. I will do what I can to make sure that I get home.
Nice.
I think for me, it's important for, you know, we talk about work-life balance and stuff. If I can get home to my dog, my partner, then that's what I will try to do. So I tried, you know, this year, I'll be really honest, I think I've not stayed away once and as well. So I try my best not to stay away.
Yeah.
It's a real bad thing.
Are you rocking some kind of great bed? What's going on? Are you got some kind of...
Do you know what? My bed is the technology. Best bed that you could ever have in your life. I spent 2 days at my mum's the other week just to visit family.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to go early. I just want my bed. It's so much better than this. Listen, I'll pay you for a new bed.
Yeah. Yeah. A good bed's a good thing for sure. Apart from you, no self norms, and I know you're not a coffee shop, but have you got a favourite coffee shop?
Coffee One will always be my favourite. I can't even tell you when I joined that business, the love and the excitement for a brand, you know, I've only ever felt that now in my life. I've not felt that with any other brand. So for me, that always have a real special place in my heart, I think.
It was excellent. I judged them at a Publican's judging award thing and sure it was Publican, one of those, and they won. I mean, they won by a country mile. The team that came in to present to us were just so impressive.
Hello.
You know, the documentation, the results, the brand, the care and attention. I mean, it really was something quite special. Have you got a favorite bar or pub, and what would your poison be if you drink?
So I do, but it's very local to me. It's a place called the Bower Inn in Bridgewater, Somerset. So a massive shout out to them. Their massive accolade is that they won Four in a Bed. So the lady who runs there did a great job. That would probably be my favourite place. In terms of drink, I don't mind a cider.
Yeah.
Happy with cider, especially if it's a bit fruity as well. So I'm not really on for apple, but give me something like strawberry and something silly like kiwi. I'm all for it. Yeah, but I have a bit of a twizz on my drinks.
Yeah, during COVID, I went a bit mad on the old dark fruits. and then I did a podcast with a chap, and he was in Herefordshire. Was it Oliver? And it turned out, as well as being an amazing cider maker, you know, he was also the tour manager since the 80s of the Proclaimers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like, let's ditch that. I just want to talk about the Proclaimers. This is great. it was really interesting. But he very kindly sent me a bunch of cider, you know, during COVID as well. And some of it was just absolute moon juice. You know, I was absolutely out my head when I had it. You know, so,
good time.
Oh, no, it was great. Yeah. Well, yeah, I got out of my head, you know, although I was locked in. And then, do you have a favourite restaurant? And what would you be eating there?
Oh, that's a hard one. Favorite restaurant? I don't know. I really don't know. The thing is, I'm a massive foodie, but I like street food. Street food is a thing. So, you know, I'd rather go to a van and have a burger from somewhere or, you know, was it Yorkshire pudding wrap or whatever. For me, that kind of food is the best food.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who are making that food absolutely believe and they love that food. So it's made very differently is when you go to a restaurant. So for me, I'd much rather street food. It's my problem. I love street food.
No, that makes sense. It makes sense. And the very last thing then was just a question about Vita Mojo was, you know, if anyone's in your situation where they're basically saying, not sure about this tech thing, don't know what it'll bring me, you know, I think I'll just stick where I am, you know, how would you persuade them or you know, let them know why it was a good idea?
I think if I would trust in the advice from the team, they are obviously, you know, in the position they are because they are experts in that field. And it's really clear to see from, you know, the technology that they have and the software behind the scenes. For me, I think that as a brand, we've been able to focus, move our attention from a system that was not working and was taking all of our time to now being able to have a system that is solid, works, and is doing what it needs to do. And we can focus on, you know, growing the business and doing the things we need to. And I have every faith in the background that, you know, Vitamojo and the team are always looking at ways to innovate and, you know, do things better. So they don't just, you know, maintain a system that is put in. They're always looking to evolve it and to do better. So I would say, you know, trust in the team, what they're saying, believe in the numbers, you know, they're absolutely right. And give it a chance. If not, you can call me. I'd be happy to give anybody a bit of feedback, because I love them, and I'm always honest. If I don't believe in something, I definitely will not talk about it. And I've always been that way. But for us and for Cup, they've really helped streamline things. That's make things a lot easier.
Brilliant. Okay, I'll love you and leave you then, and let you get back to your day. Thanks so much for being on the podcast, Paul. It's been a real pleasure to meet you as well, and I hope we bump into each other sometime. You know, and you could, well, maybe if you're visiting the Brighton store, give me a shout. And we'll get a wee boba.
Bab, thank you so much.
All right, take it easy. Thanks so much. Thank you. Bye. Okay, there we go. That was a bubbly interview with my new friend Paul Tanner down in Bristol. We had a couple of technical difficulties at the start, but we managed to iron those out. So I hope you really enjoy the episode. It was great talking to Paul. I really felt his good energy, enthusiasm for hospitality, for people, and for making bubble tea and boba much more famous in the minds of the UK consumer. So I wish them well in their journey. They're at 35-ish at the moment. They're about to have another 10 to 15 opening soon. So I really think this will be one of those podcasts that I'll treasure, because when they become nationally famous and internationally famous, I can say I knew him when he was only at 35 stores. So great job by the Cup founders, by Paul, by the team, and I hope you can go and check it out soon. Download the app and you can get yourself some sweet treats while you're on there too. So keep an eye out for them. I think they're going to be massive.
This podcast is sponsored by Vitamojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. Just visit vitamojo.com/supersonic and get in touch with the team right away. That's vitamojo.com/supersonic. So this is me, Mark McSee, signing off for another podcast, and I'm really looking forward to the next time we're together. Next time, we'll hear from many, many more interesting people with top tips, tricks, and tales that will make your brand boom.